You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 95, Fern Gully, the Last Rainforest. Not Lorax approved. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. We're your hosts, Morgan Stradling, Chelsea Robson, and Mason Smith. Say hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
Perfect. I fell for that. So for those of you who are new to our show, the Animation Addicts Podcast is a show about animated films. We are devoted and we are obsessed with the world of animation. So this episode and this podcast really gives us an opportunity to geek out and fangirl and fanboy about the films that we love. And we were sort of doing, it seems like we've done quite a few films that deal with environmentalism recently on and off. And so, of course, we had to hit one of our favorites, which is Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest. So that is the movie that we are going to be reviewing today.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, this, can I just say, it's not as bad as I guess people, I thought it would have been, even though I liked this when I was younger.
After our discussion on Once Upon a Forest, like, I wonder if some of our listeners were, like, you know, all excited to hear what I had to say about this film, be like, oh, Mason's going to hate this film because he's Mason. but you know what? I hate to disappoint you, or maybe I won't disappoint you, but I actually kind of had a fun time watching it this time. You know, I still want a diesel car, but it's a clean burning diesel, but it wasn't that bad. And I think this will be a good surprising episode for all of our listeners. Oh, I love the thunder tube. There's been a lot of thunder here in Texas. We've literally had rain for 14 days straight.
Yeah. Whoa.
Arizona doesn't have rain like that, but...
Well, according to this movie, the trees make the clouds, and so I'm going to go chop down a few trees after this episode so that it won't rain as much anymore down here. I mean, we're out of the drought, you know?
Yes.
We can start chopping down trees again. Lighting fires, you know?
So we also have another update. Can we talk about Patreon?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
So we also have another update that is really, really exciting. We have officially launched our first Patreon page. So for those of you who don't know, Patreon is a platform that allows content creators to basically to get paid for the work that they provide for free. Those who want to provide a little extra and get some perks while they're at it, they're able to support these content creators, basically, which gives them the ability to put even more content out there. We at the Animation Addicts Podcast, we have been very, very consistent about releasing an episode every 2 weeks for the past 3 years. And I've been very proud about that. You know, you don't go 2 or 3 months without an episode. We put a lot of time into these episodes and making sure that we deliver them for you guys, the listeners, so you can hear us talk about a new animated film. But we haven't been able to go weekly, and we haven't been able to, you know, do this news show that we've been talking about. And with Patreon, this allows us to get compensated for the time that we're putting into the podcast, and which will also allow us to do even more podcasts for you guys. It's really, really awesome. I'm a patron myself of a different podcast. And basically the reason I'm a patron of that podcast is if that podcast went away, my life would just, it'd be very sad. So I just donate a certain amount a month. And I'm very happy. I have lots of perks that happen. And with the Rotoscopers Patreon, there are tons of perks that we are giving for supporting us at different levels. We have a patron-only Facebook group, so that way you can interact with us, the hosts, and the other patrons, and just, you know, get to know the community that much more. We have monthly call-in shows where you guys can call in and ask us anything, and we can just, it's basically like a free-form show where we can just talk and nerdy couch discuss and all sorts of things. And then, you know, there are even more perks as you donate at a higher and higher level. We're just doing a monthly contribution level instead of per episode, because some of our goals is once we reach a certain level per month, we're going to start releasing on a weekly basis. We're going to start doing a news show. So all that information is at rotoscopers.com/Patreon or rotoscopers.com/patron. And you can check it all out. We have an awesome video that the three of us worked on explaining Patreon a little more. I'm just so excited about this. What are you guys?
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah. Well, you'll see in our Patreon pitch video that you get to see us, like, you know, like in our houses, like hanging, like walking around and in our natural element. And basically what this Patreon like subscription will do is bring you like closer to us. If you can't get enough of me, Morgan, and Chelsea, then this Patreon is really for you, because you're going to get even more content than normal. It's not that the podcast or the, or our, you know, our YouTube videos or the site is going to change at all. Like, we're still going to have our presence there. But if you want even more rotoscopers, then we invite you to participate in our, and as a patron of the rotoscopers.
Absolutely. And it's still free. Everything that we're doing now is still going to be free. This is an obligation for, you know, the show to continue. It's for those who just want a few extra perks and want to see the show grow ultimately.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
So on that note, let's jump into our nerdy couch discussion.
Yo, the name is Patty. The logic is erratic. Potato in a jacket. Toys in the attic.
That's right, folks. We rarely have a nerdy couch discussion anymore these days.
I
feel like we have plenty of small nerdy discussions within the main discussion of the episode, like within the stuff that we review, but it's been a while since we've taken the time to have like a set aside themed discussion on the nerdy couch.
It's a missed couch.
Oh. I know. I miss my butt grooves.
This is us. Anyway.
Get off my groove.
But I felt that this was a perfect film to have a nerdy couch discussion, because we're always talking about environmentalism in animated films. I mean, when you think of the 90s, half the movies have some sort of environmental theme or environmentalism.
It's either orphans or environment.
Or Captain Planet, right?
He's a hero.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, anyways, I just wanted to everyone sit on their couch. Let's talk about this theme. You know, we did do an episode a while back, Once Upon a Forest, which also is very heavy on this theme. But there's lots of movies, not only in the 90s, but, you know, before and after, that focus on this. And so I thought it'd be a great time for us to sit down and chat through them, which ones worked, didn't work, common themes. So let's get at it.
A lot of our listeners probably already know my position on environmentalism in films, but I took a Watership Down as an example of an interesting side of it, where the humans aren't like the main antagonist, you know, hell bent on destroying the environment and stuff, and it's up to the bunnies to stop them. They're just kind of like added to the list of things that want to kill the bunnies, and they make a few comments on how, you know, human expansion will never stop until it's filled the whole earth, and that it's wasteful and destructive. And then it goes through the horrors of land development and how it destroyed this bunny lair. And so that was an interesting take. And then, I can't think of a lot that were like blatantly conservationalist or environmentalist. Maybe the Lorax.
Oh, definitely the Lorax. See, as I was watching this movie, I just kept thinking of all these movies that kind of took from it. See, Ferngully was probably the very first of my recollection that was complete conservationalism, environmentalist. And that was just my whole outlook on this film. But as I watched it this time, I just kept thinking, I'm like, wow, for being only 76 minutes long, it still managed to pack in all of the story elements of so many other environmentalist films later on. Like, the songs may differ, but the story is the same. So later on, Once Upon a Forest, you know, they came the year after, and it's like kind of put out the thing of like, not all humans are bad. And then later, obviously for me, it was like Pocahontas. Come on. Can you hear the colors of the wind and hear the trees talking?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Also Grandmother Willow.
Yeah, totally.
And but then, she doesn't die. Yeah.
No, she doesn't disappear into a million specks of dust. But in Epic, the Mystic Lady fades into...
Oh, that's right.
You know, does the exact same thing.
Yeah, and that was very similar to Ferngully with the, you know, the Mystic Magi mother. And then, or what's her name, Maggie or Maggie?
Maggie.
Yeah. Epic wasn't so much about you know, the forest versus man. It was like, who is the villain in Epic? Mandrake.
Yeah.
Mandrake wants to spread his fungus and his, like, natural destruction.
Right.
And so it's like, it wasn't as poignant, I guess.
But my roommate had the Family Fun edition of this DVD, which had a bonus disc of all of the making of Ferngully.
Oh, okay.
So in the making of, it goes on to say that the story of Hexus actually comes from some Australian legend that there's this actual destruction, this creature that lives inside the volcano that will come out and destroy everybody else. So this movie was kind of their way of saying that the Earth's natural destruction coupled with man's desire for destruction will be a terrible combination. So I put those two together very much.
Well, all right.
And then Rio 2, The Loggers.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I get all that. So they'll see. You know, it seems like Ferngully, like, there were obviously films with conservational messages before Ferngully, but I feel like this was, like, the biggest and the loudest up until that point.
I believe
and,
so, yeah.
And there's so many films that, like, take elements from it. Yeah, like, sure, Pocahontas, but, like, Avatar. That was, like... It had so many parts that were like Ferngully.
Yeah.
Down to the becoming one of them, you know, thing, and like living amongst them and learning their ways element, you know. Down to the giant tree that they all hide in. Yeah.
It's true.
So it seems like all those films have like similar themes to Ferngully to where it, you know, it's almost like it's not copying of it, but it seems very derivative of Ferngully.
Yeah, and it might just be like part of this topic. The topic of saving the environment, saving the trees, save the rainforest, all maybe have certain elements that, okay, if you're going to do a movie about it, you have to include, you know, person shrinks down to, you know, fairy size, blah, blah, blah.
If we could live amongst them.
Yes, if we could live amongst them, then we could see their point of view. Like, I feel that's a topic that, you know, helps you better understand, like, oh, I don't want to pollute anymore because there's animals that... I'm not trying to say that I'm, like, against, you know, or for pollution. I'm just saying that is a topic that we seem to see in films about conservationism.
Sure.
But I was thinking of a few other movies, and they're not necessarily, like, environmentalist films per se in the way that Ferngully is, but just bear with me. So there is Pompoko, which I don't know is a more of a, it's a lesser known Studio Ghibli film. And it's very much like Watership Down in the fact that there's these kind of raccoons called Tanuki who are trying to save their land basically from Japanese urbanation. So, you know, urbanation, logging, those sort of fall in line. And so they try to like fight back against the humans by using like magical powers and a bunch of stuff. It's very odd. You know, but that's, you know, a perspective of people are taking our lands. Princess Mononoke.
Ah, yes.
Nature versus
in the which nature itself is totally violated.
Absolutely.
The very spirit of the forest.
I could see it a little bit in Finding Nemo. You know.
Well, yeah, I feel like Finding Nemo and then Finding Dory, I think, has this... I don't know if the plot got leaked to me or if it was just speculation, but I think I know what happens at the end, and it has to do with, like, you know...
No spoilers!
I'm trying to say it in a way that won't spoil it, but I guess I can't. It has a conservationist message.
Which I'm not surprised, but yeah.
Well, you know, Pixar, you mentioned Pixar. Pixar's kind of funny because it seems like a lot of its films, like, make... Some films, yes, have a blatant message about the impact of urbanization and human growth. And, of course, you have WALL-E, you know. that is not subtle at all in how it portrays human waste and how far it can go. And then there are other films that are more subtle that just have a few references to it, you know, like Finding Nemo, you know, humans have a talent for capturing and exploiting living creatures. And then, what's another one? Like Up, it kind of takes a stab at how, you know, urbanization and city growth and stuff like that, and how they want to tear his house down. And then there's Cars that just has no references at all to saving the environment. They're all gasoline cars.
Well, no, there's in Cars 2, there's the fact that they're moving to the electric car or like this alternative form of energy, you know, and it's all against big oil because the global villainous big oil ring is the one that, you know, is getting all the money.
All the broken down Fiats are the bad cars that want to keep their oil money.
Yep.
I forgot about that element. I just remember explosions.
Yeah. So it's very green. That movie, when you think of it, it's very like pro green, pro, you know, new ways of finding energy and whatnot, which is kind of what these movies in the early 90s were. Just we have a different talking point. You know, we can talk about green. We can talk about new energy, whatnot, electric cars. I don't think that was something that was really, progressed too much back in the 90s. Another one is Ponyo. This is one that is very, very prominent. People have asked us to do this a long time. Ponyo is like this little fish and she lives in the ocean and she's constantly surrounded by pollution around her home. And the humans in that movie, they take the ocean and the sea for granted. They think it's like a nuisance in the fact that it, you know, it floods their island homes and they don't really recognize the power of the ocean and how it's this great natural resource. In that film, it's just like, ugh, the ocean, it's always getting in the way and people are just polluting it as a result. So, you know, that's, Studio Ghibli very much, we've already listed, you know, three different films of theirs. This is a kind of a message they like to talk about.
Yeah.
In their films.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we've covered a lot of them. Oh, when I took a film class at BYU, we watched an animated film called The Man Who Planted Trees. Have you ever watched that?
No.
It's old, but it's not like super old.
I'm not interested. No. Just kidding.
Well, I don't know. And the whole film's animated, but it's animated it has a very painterly quality. In fact, I think that every frame was literally hand painted. And it's I forget the story, but it's about a man who planted trees, and it obviously has some sort of like kind of spiritual metaphor behind the planting of the trees and stuff like that. But I do remember that. And then there was a Lorax back in the day, like before they made the CG one.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice. So yeah. Why do you think we've seen so many of these animated films that are focused on this topic? Do you feel that, is it because animated films and films in general kind of give someone a platform to talk about their message? Mm. Or is it just because it was a hot button topic at the time? Like, why so many?
Well, as far as a hot button topic, I don't think there'll be a time when environmentalism will ever not be a hot button topic. I think it's, you know, a sentiment in our society that is here to stay. But I think you were right when you said that animation as a storytelling medium is definitely a platform for exploring and addressing issues and views that are important in the world today. And
I'm just going to say, I think it has a lot to do with the fact that it goes to kids, or at least people think of it as something to kids. And so they like want to start people young thinking about these things, thinking about how, you know, we need to not pollute the earth, and thinking about how we need to plant seeds and mystical ladies fade into nothing every once in a while. And, you know, these things we need to think about.
The fairies, kids.
Don't kill the fairies.
Yeah, think exactly. Of the fairies. Well,
we don't have unicorns anymore. Hello.
Exactly.
I think that's a really good point, Chelsea, because for better or worse, kids are susceptible to messages, you know, in a cartoon film. Like, it can be done. And in as much as producers still believe that animation is a kid's medium, it can be used to propagate certain views, viewpoints and calls to action. And, you know, of course it's up to the parents whether they agree or disagree with it. I haven't really come across an animated film that was like blatantly, like totally opposite of my views. Some of them were just annoying by how obnoxious they were.
And that's really, that's really my beef with the whole thing. Like, honestly, I don't have, my views are not contrary to what a lot of these movies want to share. But for me, it was, it's almost like I just get annoyed with the fact that it's just the same plot elements over and over. And I just feel like, come on, it's the easy way out. You're okay. I'm sorry. It's the loggers. Yep. The loggers are the one that at the end they're, it's like, you know, the butler, the butler always done it.
Well, yeah. The, how is this different from any other type of, you know, film, you know, a horror film? There's always these stereotypical elements that, or a romance film, y'all, you know, they're going to fall so for each
always,
other.
Then, the bad guy's always the guy with the mustache.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's all these things in films that we're always going to see. And within this, you know, subset of films being environmental films, I think there's just certain elements that you have to hit because you necessarily, yeah, you want to hit them, or they just will help you share your story a little more.
Well,
I don't know.
If we want to dive more into the theme or like the element of like the villain in these films with a, you know, a conservationist message, I think like the slide rule of tolerance for Mason is whether or not they completely vilify mankind by default,
yeah,
as inherently destructive, wasteful, selfish, lazy creatures, or if they separate the careless and the neglectful ones who are poor stewards of the earth versus the ones who strive to maintain some sort of balance or give back to the earth after it has been taken away from. Yep. The way I see it, the earth is a resource. There's no reason you shouldn't do your best to replenish that resource yourself for future generations after using the resource. And so, contrary to what I thought coming into this viewing, this was like the second time I'd watched Ferngully in my life, the first time being when I was like 4 or 5. I felt like it struck, I felt like myself as a Homo sapien, I was well represented in the film. And I guess I'll talk about that when we get to it in the film. But I thought this was a good discussion because I think what we've discovered is that there are varying degrees of how in your face the environmentalist message is.
Maybe and
I'd like a moral like this in an animated film to supplement my own thinking and my own ideology, not necessarily replace it. And I don't want the same for my children, no matter what the message is.
Yes, this harkens back to Chelsea. I believe it was episode 2 when we were talking about Lorax, the news that they were making this movie, The Lorax.
Lorax approved.
She's like, I don't like it when a moral is being spoon-fed to me. Like, she's like, don't get me wrong, I like trees.
I do.
I love trees. But
yeah,
I just
okay.
don't want you to force-feed the idea that I need to love and plant trees, right? Am I right, Chelsea?
You're totally right.
And I think
right.
that goes exactly with what Mason said, you know, with these films. Yes, it's great to have a message. That's the whole point of telling a story, is because you have something you want to share, an idea, a thought, an ideology. However, when it's so in your face, it comes off very, not disgusting.
Oh, contrived.
God, not the word.
It just seems contrived.
Because then I feel like you are forcing something on me and I can't just enjoy the film and then make my own opinions based on what you've presented. It's sort of like documentaries that are so one-sided. I almost don't want to watch them because I'm like, well, I know you're leaving a lot out.
Right.
So. Mm-hmm.
What if Michael Moore made an animated film? But, you know, on the flip side, if they made an animated film about how Texas is the greatest place on earth, then yes, I would be fine with it no matter how in your face it was. So that's kind of the thing with us.
And there you go.
Just beyond your dreams, there is a secret world where every sound is a song. Every tree a home, and humans exist only in fairy tales. Until now.
Are you really a human?
Last time I checked.
This is a tale of a magical place where high-flying creatures...
I'm blind! No! I can see! It's a miracle!
...will reach deep into your heart.
I'm Zach. I'm Krista.
20th Century Fox invites you to witness the wonder.
This is so incredible.
Spread the word.
How can you live without trees?
And plant the seed to save a place called Fern Gully, the last rainforest.
So let's jump into our main discussion. If you haven't figured out yet, we are talking about the 1992 animated film, which is called Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest.
Yeah, yeah. And if you want to talk about Fern Gully and discuss it with your friends, specifically on the internet, don't be a noob and say it as two words. Fern Gully is all one word, you know?
Yeah.
Like when Harry Potter's like, diagonally.
Exactly.
Did he say diagonally? That's what I thought. But yeah. And also, The Last Rainforest. Can we talk about that? Apparently, this film is set in an alternate universe where there is but one rainforest left on Earth.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that because I'm like, even in the 90s, there were plenty of rainforests left.
Well, it's not like there are more rainforests now. There's plenty less since the 90s. But yeah, I mean, there's a rainforest in India. There's a rainforest in Africa.
Tons in South America.
Central America. Yeah, there's tons. There's jingles. But yeah. I even heard there's one in Canada, but I'm yet to confirm that there's a rainforest in Canada, but you know, there might be.
So let's talk about this film and a little backstory for you. So it was released April 10th, 1992. It is 75 minutes long, which I personally appreciated when I was booting this up and watching it. I was like, oh yes. Basically, I woke up at 5:30 on a Sunday, and I didn't have much to do before going to church, so I did watch this at 6 a.m. on a Sunday, and I was very happy to be done around 7:15. Most people are still sleeping.
Dedicated.
Anyways, I know. It was done by quite a few production companies, Courier Films, A Films, and FAI Films, but it was distributed by 20th Century Fox, which is probably the more well-known entity. The budget was $22 million, and it did okay. It did $32.7 million. However, this to me, its legacy is that just as a kid in the 90s, I just remember seeing this film all the time. I remember them
home
showing
video, man.
Home video. It was shown in school a lot, like on Earth Day.
Oh yeah.
And you know, anytime they wanted to kind of show a movie that had something to do with the Earth and saving the Earth, like Fern Gully ended up being it. So, it was actually pushed back from a release date in November 1991 because they wanted to avoid competition with Disney's Beauty and the Beast. Now, if you don't remember, this is also this is an issue that our friend Don Bluth faced with his movie Rockadoodle. And so it ended up competing head-to-head with Rockadoodle, the poor thing. But
I know. The Duke didn't hit the roof until much later.
So, and lastly, directed by Bill Croyer, obviously, of Croyer Films, which I'm interested to see. What did they do? Did they do anything else other than that? Oh, actually, they did a few little things here and there. They did mostly title animation sequences. For example, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Christmas Vacation, Jetsons movie. They also did a few things in the early 90s, some additional animation for The Thief and the Cobbler, which makes me really sad because...
Oh, that makes him the enemy.
Yes, that is not Richard Williams. Like that, we're not going to talk Warrior Films
Doom on
anymore.
You. Doom on you.
They did do Bobby's World, though. I appreciate
that. His voice freaks me out.
You know what's interesting about this film? Courier Films actually started out as kind of like, you know, real effects. They just started out doing mostly commercials. And then these two guys from Australia walked in and they just said, hey, we want to make a movie and we'll front it if you make it. And they're like, okay, why not? And so
dollar signs,
right? And so what happened was they only had 13 people working for them at the time. They took a small little field trip to Australia, and they spent about a couple, you know, like 2 weeks or so in Australia, and they just spent time in the rainforest. They spent time just going around and getting ideas. And after they got home, from the time they got off the plane until it opened in theaters 2 years later, they had to grow from 13 to over 200 and get the whole thing written, storyboarded, drawn, inked and painted, and filmed. And I was like, whoa, that's a lot to do in 2 years. So they hustled.
Well, with 22 million behind them, I mean, But yeah, I mean, that's an incredible production schedule for 2 years, you know, going from, you know, 13 to over 200. It's really interesting.
And the good thing for them is that this movie wasn't really a flop. I mean, made a budget. It made its budget back. And people my age remember this. You know, it was really funny. Sometimes on the film we talk about, or on the podcast we talk about first thoughts and recollections. And I just, you know, remember seeing this, you know, from time to time. But I was at a pizza parlor a few weeks ago, and they have this little kid area with some, you know, blocks and mini kid chairs. And there was a movie, and they were playing a VHS copy of Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest. And yes, a testament to this movie is there are about five children who were just engrossed with this movie. They were sitting around, they were watching, and this movie obviously did something for them where they wanted to sit down. And I think maybe it was the fact they'd probably never seen it before. I think fairies are interesting. The bat for children is interesting. But anyways, I saw that and I just sort of did like a mini fist bump. I was like, yes, yes, animation wins again.
This was actually the very first film, period, to ever be shown in the UN. On Earth Day, of course.
You're kidding me.
No. And it was just like,
what, did they gather all the world's leaders around and were like, hey, we're all going to watch Fern Gully?
Basically. They actually had Olivia Newton-John be like the person that was introducing it, saying, this is a wonderful film that will change children forever. So, here.
Let's get physical, physical. Let's get physical. Olivia Newton-John?
Yes, Olivia Newton-John. But one other cool thing about not just the production of this, but how its legacy has kind of continued on. I actually was able, like I mentioned, I had the Family Fun edition of this DVD, which has two discs, and it had the making of, and in the making of, the director said that his wife was the one who was in charge of all of the hiring, and that she did such a great job in making it such a cohesive group that to that day, every 5 years, they still had a reunion for all of the crew, and sometimes 50 or 60 people would show up. And one thing I had a question on is if anybody who is listening to this goes to that reunion, I want to know if it's still going on, and two, can we come too?
That would be amazing. My 10-year high school reunion is coming up, and I have no interest in going. However,
I know you gotta go.
I would love to go to the 25th anniversary party for Fern Gully. So much more. And I don't even know anyone there.
How do you go to the Fern Gully?
That's why we're putting this out there. I want to go.
If anyone is out there listening and you are involved in Fern Gully and you're going to the reunion, then please let us come.
Exactly.
Please let us be your plus one.
Yeah.
Plus three, make it.
Okay, so let's go into the movie.
All right. Whenever I do my research for these films, I always look on the IMDb message boards.
Got to.
Yeah, I totally did this time too, and it just made me laugh. I thought it was so humorous looking at some of the recent posts. The top one was, am I alone here, or is Krista hot? Capital H-O-T, question mark?
Yeah, that's by this one dude, and then the same guy has another on the top recent posts. The same guy that says, bump if you think Krista is hot, H-O, you know, all caps, hot. It's like, this guy really wants his point to get across that he is attracted to this cartoon character.
But what's really funny...
Sure, she's got like this 80s, like, Kim Wilde, Laura Branigan, you know, 80s look, but I don't know.
I love some of these other ones. Scariest cartoon ever, as we'll get into this. A lot of people seem to have issue with the villain, think that he's very scary. So one guy says, this was my favorite movies as a kid. And then we have the person who's the downer, Rainforest, Main Forest.
Which is actually a South Park reference.
I wouldn't know.
Well, and they go in and talk about it. I looked into this and I was like, what is that? And he's like, his quote was this, I love animals and I am not for the complete annihilation of trees, wildlife, etc. But rainforests kind of suck. I'm not a fan of preserving malaria, Ebola, smallpox, humidity, cannibals, and those vines that eat people in the ruins.
Like, oh yeah, that movie.
You people are funny. Oh, people are funny.
They got a point.
Yeah.
All right. And here's one last thing on the Krista is hot. If you just Google Fern Gully Krista, I'm doing it right now.
Oh, no.
Why does this always come up?
I will include this in the show notes for everybody.
Why does this never, why does this always come up? First Google search is, of course, Ferngully Krista. Second, Ferngully Krista and Zach. Okay, I get it. Third, Ferngully Krista feet.
What?
Like, the whole foot fetish thing is that prevalent to where it's the third most popular search for Ferngully Krista? The other ones are Ferngully Krista costume, Ferngully Krista doll, and Ferngully Krista's father. So it's not like, it's not like the usual Google search suggested, you know, searches, but I don't get the whole feet thing. Anyway, I just think it's funny that there's always that entry when you Google things.
Yeah.
I'm going to look for Grandmother Willow and see if someone searched for Grandmother Willow feet.
Was it just me, though?
Or Grandmother Willow hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, Grandmother Willow cosplay hot. You know who you are out there. Or,
does she remind you of Damona from Gargoyles? Because that is all I could think of. All she needed was a little headband thing, and it was Damona's little cousin.
Nice.
Let's see. Gargoyles, Damona human, Damona transformation, Damona fan fiction. Oh, boy. Damona and Goliath, Damona action figure. Surprisingly clean.
So talking about Krista, we got some voicemails, which we'll read a little bit later, but it was funny how in two of the voicemails, they couldn't remember Krista's name, and they just referred to her as the Red Dress Fairy, which is
Red
so
Dress
true.
Fairy.
Red Dress Fairy. So in this podcast, we will either refer to her as Krista, well, probably only refer to her as Krista, but you might hear Red Dress Fairy pop up in homage. Fairy. So anyway, so let's jump into the movie.
Oh, yeah, we kind of go into the lore of the fairies, don't we?
Yes, this is very similar to Watership Down. They go into the lore and the history, I guess, of the bunnies and their mythology. But this, very similar type of scene, but I loved it. I felt that the design was really cool and tribal in a way. The animation was not complicated at all. However, I still liked this and just the vibe that it set up from the very beginning.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. And of course we have the, you know, it's narrated by the wise woman, Maggie.
Which I think is an interesting name because like Magi is, you know, a wise man or, you know, wise person. And I feel like they just put a spin on that instead of by calling her like Magi. Just
gave it a more feminine twist.
Magi. Yeah, yeah. Now I'm getting all confused because there's about 40 different ways to say this word.
I believe it's pronounced Idne. But yeah.
So we're introduced to Hexus a little bit at the beginning.
Yeah, a foreshadowing, isn't it?
Well, you got to introduce the bad guy just so people know, oh, I'm supposed to fear the bad guy.
Fear.
There's a trouble a-brewing.
Yep. Storm's coming. All right, so what do y'all think about the music in this film?
You know, I give it an okay for
it's
the most
okay.
part.
Uzma Kappa for you, Ferngully.
Uzma Kappa.
It's okay.
It's okay.
The score was actually done by Alan Silvestri, which he's actually famous for another Forrest movie, Forrest Gump. So I felt like his did a good job. As far as the music with words, I liked the first song, the opening song. I was like, I'm sitting there, I'm enjoying it, and I'm thinking, this is cool. I can get behind this song.
You know, the music is very much all over the place in this film. At one point, a random, I don't know if a Goanna is reptilian or amphibian, but that song was weird and random and it made no sense. And well, then, all that stuff.
It's like, of course, like there's nothing that dates a movie from the late 80s, 90s more than just some horrible rap.
Horrible rap. By Robin Williams. Yeah. Lord bless and keep him, but he was not meant to rap.
No, you're talking about the Goanna song? Or Joanna? I'm not sure which one, because...
Well, Goanna. Joanna is the name of the Goanna in Rescues Down Under.
There you go. Okay, so the Goanna song was actually written by Jimmy Buffett.
I was like, of course it was.
What would Jimmy Buffett
what?
Do?
And the reason they put this in there was because while they were on their little excursion to Australia, they were at dinner at a place and this guy was like, hey, there's a Goanna right there. go ahead and chuck your chicken at it. And so they're like, okay. So they just like throw their little bone of chicken at him, and his tongue goes all the way out and like wraps around and like pulls it into their mouth. And they're just like, oh my gosh, we need to put this in our movie.
We need to have a goanna somehow in our movie.
And that's the point where they're like, we'll make it fit.
So we'll write a song on behalf of this one character we'll never see again.
We'll have
that. It's a regular Cinderella moment. I'll make it fit.
Exactly.
I think the music was neither memorable nor very cohesive to me. Like there isn't like a one song from this film that I remembered.
No.
Or that even got stuck in my head or anything.
Yeah, that little opening, like Chelsea said, was okay. Like, I remember enjoying it at the time, but I can't tell you anything about it.
Yeah, no, I can't.
And I know there was this horrible rap, my name is Betty, and that's all basically I know. And, yeah, no, just, oh, and there is the very somewhat sexual, villain song, which I guess we'll talk about later.
That's interesting, yeah. But yeah, that deserves its own discussion point.
Yes, when we get there.
There's one thing I do know is that panpipes are sexy, and Mr. Redhead Mullet Fairy, what's his name? Pips?
Like Pips. Christian Slater.
Christian Slater.
Woohoo, man.
Yeah. Slater. That's like such an extreme last name. If your last name is Slater, you're like either a skater, a parkour guy, a base jumper, or like a surfer. Isn't there a surfer with a last name Slater?
Kelly Slater.
And Surf's Up? Yeah.
Well, and he's a real life too, but yes.
Yeah, I know that, but he's also in Penguin form.
Ah, yes. Yeah, I like him a lot. You know, sometimes you have these male foils that, you know, the girl's supposed to like, but she doesn't for one reason or another, and she likes the forbidden foreign guy. But I liked this guy. I thought he was kind of, like, there was nothing Gastonish about him that made me not like him.
Gaston, of course, being the worst.
Or Coco, yep. You know, Coco, there's nothing wrong with Coco. I always liked Coco.
There really wasn't. Pocahontas made a poor choice.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know. John Smith's charming and all that, but Coco's a warrior, man. He can protect Pocahontas.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, I don't really mind him either.
I
like
it was
at the
cool
end where she totally runs off with him.
Right. Well, they couldn't make him the foil particularly, or the bad guy in any way, because
There's
too many bad guys, one, but also, like, she's gonna end up with him inevitably. Like, you know, they're from two different worlds. We can't have the human and the fairy together.
I don't know why not, because later they talk about, like, oh, you're so different than us. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, no, like you're physically, your bodies look exactly the same, except for you have pointy ears and fairies and he doesn't.
Also, he wears much more clothes than all of you.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I do disapprove of Spectre is his choice of friends to run around with. They're like, who are these guys? They don't even look like fairies.
No, yeah, and they're not even like real fairies because they don't have wings and they have to fly around on these beetles.
Yeah, you know in Epic where they had those like Mennonite fairy dudes that were like running around with Mandrake? It's kind of like that. They're like a different species.
Okay, so let's go into just like the fairy world. I think that's one reason why kids like this movie so much is because it's fairies, and fairies are fun, and they can fly. And I really kind of thought it was cool that every fairy had, like, a certain glow behind them, kind of reminding me a little bit of lightsabers when they flew. Uh-huh. Although it seemed everyone had the same color, blue, or was it green? But Krista had a different color. And I think, I don't know if that's just because she was, like, you know, Maggi in training or, you know, old lady to be in training. But hers was different than everyone else's, because at the very end when they're all flying in that big circle, they're all similar, except for her.
Huh, yeah, that's a good point. I noticed that some of them seem to have different glows, but then they all turned into the same glow at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
She's the chosen one.
Yes.
That's why she's getting all these Maggi lessons.
Oh, I always loved Maggi because she was like this old lady, but she had long hair. And I know that sounds really stupid, but not every old lady can pull off long hair. But she was cool, and she had sort of this like really bubbly, bulbous fat dress. And then when she flies, just like flowers follow behind her. And so, you know, ooh, there's something special about her. She creates life wherever she walks.
Oh yeah. That's true. At least they're realistic about animals killing other animals. Cause when she goes above the canopy, the hawk almost kills her.
Yeah. Well, I think it is interesting that she's never been above the canopy before. I mean,
She's never been above the surface.
She's never been...
Well, how are fairies created? I mean, are they still created from the laugh of the, you know, the first child that broke into a million pieces?
Tinkerbell.
I know, but that's the question. Like,
that's weird.
At what point in time is she, was she like born older or was she like?
No, yeah. I think she's just been super sheltered and we just happened to witness her one time
where she
went up to the surface and touched the butt.
Well, we don't really go into like her upbringing besides
you.
Nothing happened.
But yeah, they don't really go into her upbringing. She has a dad, but he's just kind of like, hey, what's going on? That's like all he says.
He's like the Sultan from Aladdin, basically. Yeah. Yeah. I would, I heard there's a sequel. Not sure if it's a prequel or a true sequel, but I'm kind of interested in her backstory. Find this. I could delve deeper if they did a good job, which they won't. So let's never talk about it again.
Never talk about it again.
Okay. So then, you know, we're introduced to, you know, Maji. She's the creator of everything. And, you know, with this seed, help it grow. To me, like, that is something that always stood out to me about this movie, is this like glowing seed that if, you know, you stick it in your hand, it glows. And then, you know, so you stick it in the ground and things will be okay. And that really comes full circle later with Zach.
When this happened, I totally had one of those moments where I was like, I totally remember myself doing that after watching this. And later on when she's just like, oh, can't you feel its pain? Like, I totally remember myself like pretending to be Krista in that way. I'm like, oh, the tree is in pain.
Don't rip off its limb.
Exactly. But I totally, one of those funny moments that this really does make you, I think that's one of the reasons why you liked it, because it had the mystical elements plus a little bit of, you know, down to earth. Get it?
What's with the birds? The two birds were like, hey, where are you going? You can't just go over here.
Yeah, the guard birds that are super stylized and we never really see them again.
Yeah, they look like Zigzag from
totally
Thief and the Cobbler.
I kind of have an issue with this movie because the character designs are all over the place. Like, those birds look really cool. They're stylized. Like you said, they kind of look like Thief and the Cobbler-ish. And then you have the fairies that are kind of realistic to the most part, you know, and then you have humans. Some humans are realistic. And then you have like the two dopey humans who are super characterized and, you know, big noses and everything's out of proportion. And then you have Hexus, which is like, you know, whatever he wants to be.
I was sitting and watching this movie with some friends. And my one friend, the moment those guys showed up, he was like, it's Fagin. I'm like, it is. It's Fagin from Oliver and Company.
Nice. So anyways, that's just one thing I noticed.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, there's the warning, you know, of course, Hexus is trapped in a tree. But I saw the smoke. Oh, they're probably humans. Well, can't they just release Hexus? And she's like, there isn't a force in existence that can release Hexus. And I'm like, except for superior American engineering, we'll just cut down that sucker with this unrealistic giant tree cutting machine.
Actually, these were Australian engineers.
Oh, that's true, I guess. Oh, yeah. Isn't this supposed to be set in Australia?
Yep.
Well, I don't hear any Australians.
There would be, like, are there rainforests in Australia?
Yes.
Apparently.
They went to the rainforest in Australia. That's what the whole first part of my little thing was.
I know, but I feel like when I think of Australia, I think of, like, the outback and the desert, and I don't imagine too many areas of it having...
I just saw Mad Max, so I have a very different idea of how Australia is.
Because I feel like the only reason I say that is if this film was done by an American company, I think it would be set in South America, which is, like, the more traditional type of rainforest that you're used to.
Well, I mean, it's totally debatable, and I understand your frustration, because it's, like, it's supposed to be set in Australia, but no one's Australian in it.
Yes.
Apparently these are American contractors.
Yeah, all the voice actors are totally American. You know, even Zach.
Why we?
I understand the fairies having different accents.
To Australia to cut down trees is beyond me.
Yeah. He is Australian, though. On his little work permit, it
says...
But
he doesn't speak like he is.
I know. But I'm just saying, like, he's, like, 16 and...
He's 16!
He's 16, that's what it says.
Aren't they all 16?
Yeah, that's the magical age.
Okay, so incoming Batty. My name is Batty, did it? That's all I know.
This was Robin Williams. It was actually his very first time playing an animated character, and oh, the things that came for him after.
Yeah, the good thing he got this out of his system. I mean, he was able to wet his feet and figure it out, but good thing this didn't ruin his career, because it maybe potentially could, but it's Robin freaking Williams, so like nothing really could have ruined his career, because he's amazing. And, you know, this just led him to probably his best, or, you know, one of his best animated roles, which is The Genie. But so close together. This came out in 1992. Aladdin came out 1992. So, I mean, these were probably filmed at the same time, but it's just interesting. I love with Batty. I never realized, like, as he's just talking, you know, fast talking, he's spattering all these things that he's overheard while at the lab. Like, I think I knew he was a lab sort of bat, but you forget about things when you're little, right? And so, right. You know, he talks about it later. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, he's a lab. They've done all this experiments on him. That's why he has like an antenna hanging out of his head. But I just loved it. It was so hilarious. As he's going in and out of things, he's like, graduate students, please gather around. You know, that was Robin Williams improv.
Oh yeah.
Hi, Helen. That's like my favorite line of his. Oh, yeah. Humans, they walk around and they say things like, hi, Helen.
Oh, man. In the making of, they talked about how the voice of Krista, who is Samantha Mathis, she goes and talks about how she would say a line and then she's like, okay, after that, it was just my goal to not bust over laughing and ruin the take, because he would then just go on for 10 minutes of doing his own Robin Williams thing. And I'm just like, this is a hilarious moment.
Back in the day when they actually filmed in the same room.
I know.
So then we're introduced to this lovely 90s rap, which is stupid. Just going to say it. I mean, I try to be open-minded about lots of things, but the rap.
I mean, this song was lame back in 92 or whenever I first watched it as like a barely toddler.
Yes. Mason knew. Anyway. He knew music when he heard it.
Right? I mean, evil humans doing animal testing. The thing is like, how can we learn from nature if we don't test on how nature works? Anyway, so we've completely vilified animal testing in this rap, so let's check that off of our list for the film. But like, I wasn't impressed. Not now, not then.
No, nor was I.
I like Robin Williams' way of delivering lines and his characterization in his films better than his singing skills. Although,
A friend like
me is brilliant.
Yeah.
But it's like, he didn't have much to work with, because it's like they wrote the song for him, you know?
You know, what's interesting is that song actually came really late in the game, and it was one of those moments where they sat around and they said, okay, he needs more. We can't just like let this moment go. He's gotta have a song. And so that's where this one kind of came from. But because it came so late in the game, they're like, okay, how do we finish it now? And so they decided to do a little bit of experimentation with digital ink and paint.
Whoa.
And they said that they were the very first movie to use it. Which, I'm not sure if that's completely true, but
they thought they were.
Maybe they thought they were. But that's what they claimed. That's what they claimed. But they did a lot of experimentation with this. I mean, even with computer animation, there was one point where they had this machine that would like physically draw out. Basically, it was a very complex printer, and they would animate it on the computer, and then the printer would actually print it out, not just Xerox, though they did do that as well, but it would actually print it out, and then they would go in and hand ink and paint each cell. And they did this for like things like the leveler, and also that centipede that like crawls by all
By
crazily.
Zach.
So those are some of those moments. And then another one where Batty is flying, which, I mean, at the time it was impressive.
Have you ever noticed that when you cut to, you know, like the human technology, it looks like it was all like computer animated, or is that like Xerox thing you were talking about, Chelsea? Yeah, or they look 3D animated. So maybe it was like a way of just drawing out the outline, the contours of the polygon, or like the edges of the 3D animated.
I mean, in a way, it's kind of like, it's almost like they rotoscoped it.
Oh, it's like what AutoCAD did. It's like they animated an AutoCAD drawing for like an imaginary machine. Well, that's cool. But it does give like a different visual style for the humans versus nature stuff. So I guess from a technical standpoint, I liked that.
Yeah, I think that's a good use of computer animation. Like we've talked in the early days, it's great for vehicles. It's great for things that aren't necessarily organic. And I didn't feel taken out of the movie by seeing that. I'm not necessarily saying it was computer animation or what they did with it, but it worked.
Oh, we start mentioning humans, you know.
Oh,
and then,
God.
Of course, Krista's like, oh.
Humans. Tell me
not
more.
That one. The one playing the snarflet.
The one with the chainsaw.
Oh, the spray can. Ooh, so bad boy.
Can we just talk for a little bit about how Zach is such an idiot for trying to kill a fly by spray painting it? What a maroon.
Yes, I think we need a few minutes talking about this.
All right, our 3 minutes talking about Zach trying to kill the fly with a spray paint starts now. I might want to skip ahead. I mean, there's nothing more to be said, but it's dumb. Like, Zach does a lot of dumb things. Walkmans aren't dumb. Walkmans are cool.
He does have a sweet Walkman.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and he's marking all these trees, and then he comes up and runs right into Hex's tree.
Yeah, could they
not
put like a
giveaway?
Could they not put like a magical fairy spell on it so no one could come by it and disturb Hexus? Because Maggie is so sure, like, no, he can't be brought back. Nothing can bring him back. Well, could you at least have put like a Harry Potter-esque force field around it so no one could do that? Or you're good. No one's ever going to go 20 miles down the way and find him. Never. But they did.
Right. Does it look like you should be cutting down that big, scary, cursed tree, you know? Yeah, like, what kind of wood do you hope to get from it? Like, that's not good quality.
They're able to get some pretty decent-sized, you know, 2x4s out of it, so.
I suppose, yeah. Those aren't very smart contractors, but, you know.
A lot of waste. That's not lean.
So much waste. Not Lorax approved.
For real.
Yeah, so and then Zach tries to kill the fly with the spray paint. Let's just mention that one more time. It's so dumb. Anyway, he does a lot of dumb things. Like, I'll kill the bat with my knife. You know.
Yeah, I love when he pulls out his, you know, the old school wallet and just all those photos. Like, no one has those.
Oh, with his dog and stuff. It's so cute.
Yeah.
I know, we have them all on our phone. We don't.
Yeah. If someone pulled out, they're like, hey, you want to see my kids? And they like, photos fall out. I'd be like, okay.
You, sir, are a relic. I like when he attacks Batty, and Batty's like, I have but one claw, but beware. I love it.
So then we kind of move back to Hexus, because at this point, Hexus has been brought back. But he has to win some sort of awards for creepiest villain. I think if Chelsea were to do a, you know, scariest animated villain, he should be up there because he's nasty.
I would agree with that.
Disturbing.
I think he's even more creepy in his, like, little grimer form, you know? Hexus, use sludge! It's super effective! You know, just all the little, you know, little noises, uh-huh. You know, he's like giggling and sputtering and blooping and splooshing, and that's good animation. Like, I think Hexus is my favorite part, like, animation-wise of this film.
Yeah.
Like, Disney was accomplishing, you know, around that time, I think the movie as a whole suffers in the animation department, but... I mean, obviously they tried their best, and, you know, I could never do anything like that, you know, by myself. But Hexus, you know, when he's just kind of sludging around, I was really impressed by it. Like, pretty cool effects.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I like him as much in his second form when he's just, it's like kind of a goo guy.
Ooh, I kind of like him.
I think
he's so creepy because he has the bones of, like, and the skeleton of a human, and you start to, like, kind of have this uncanny valley. Not, like, totally uncanny valley, but he's kind of becoming, like, one of us.
He kind of looked a little bit like, I mean, just the whole transformation for me was a little bit like in Aladdin when Jafar turns into the genie, you know, just kind of like the shape and kind of like how he's moving. And then after that, it was... what is that guy? He's in Nightmare Before Christmas. He's like the guy with
Oogie Boogie.
Yeah, Oogie Boogie. totally reminds me of Oogie Boogie right there.
You're joking. You're joking. I can't believe my eyes. Just like that?
Exactly like that.
So then we go back to the fairies and, you know, we have Zach and he's been shrunk down and he's trying to like show off to Krista kind of, I don't know. And he shows her fire. And like, really? You're telling me she's never seen fire before? She lives in a rainforest. I'm pretty sure there's been occasional, you know, little fire outbreaks here and there.
So
either she's super
fire.
Sheltered or only humans have access to this, apparently.
Apparently.
There's never been any like lightning storm that accidentally, you know, catches a savanna on fire or Pride Rock. No, none of that. Okay.
None of that. Wrong movie.
Yeah. And, you know, then we have the two ideologies where, how can you live without trees? And, you know, she presents her side and he's his side where he's kind of ignorant to the whole fact he's a human. He's not really in touch with nature. And so they're starting to share points of view. But then very quickly we realize, oh yes, this is a terribly dated film with the usage of terms such as bodacious, bad, tubular,
you are
rad.
One bodacious babe.
How to date a film in 5 minutes or less. Just, yeah, any of those work. You know, and, you know, he doesn't really work because then he starts like carving her name in the tree and she's like, what? You like, can't you feel it? And there's this like mysterious thing where, you know, she can feel things through her hands and he sorts to experience that at different times. But, you know, he's basically internally, he's like, crap, I just messed up big time and got my girl mad.
Right.
Let's try to make her forget about this by taking her on her adventurous boat ride. And he just like pushes her away and it works. She's totally like, okay. They start having their magical adventure.
Oh, how romantic.
Typical.
Adventure, that's a life for me. Yeah, and then she's like, I gotta show you to all the other fairies. I love how the fairies are just like totally fine with them. They're not like, he's a human, you're a fairy,
daddy, I love him,
you know, there's nothing like that. But yeah, they're like, oh, what is this weird thing, it doesn't even have wings, you know, whatever.
And then Pip is finally a friend with them. Well, at first Pip is like, excuse me, you're moving in on my girl, I do not appreciate.
Oh yeah. And then I love how they're gonna like, hey, you wanna like party with us, human? They're like, I can take anything you can dish out.
Ding!
You know? And then they're like gonna go off, and then Chris is like, oh, come on, we're just gonna go off in the woods together. I was like, well, there we
That's
go.
That's not shady.
That's not shady.
Yeah, but not before he soils the airwaves with modern music.
Yeah,
I'm like, not really modern music. It's like from 70s or something.
I don't even know. I'm like, who is this guy listening to cool oldies station? I mean, even in the 90s, that music was old.
Hey, well, I grew up in that station. Cool 94.5.
I'm not saying it's that. I'm just saying I don't buy that Zach is listening to that type of music. I mean, hello, he's wearing a tank top. Cool.
It's like
not saying you're not cool.
Teal tank top.
Good times and great oldies.
Yeah. 4.5. So going from the old 90s, then we go into the sappy love song, which is also, it's not dated, but it is very 90s and therefore dated now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, you know, can you feel the love tonight? In animated films or even, yeah, particularly animated films, they had sort of a song like this. A very iconic moment is this one where they're walking through those puddles and the puddles change color as they step on
it. I like that part, though.
I always loved that scene.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds you of, say, like in Robin Hood, where they have that moment where they go out by the lake or whatever. But yeah, this one was so much cooler because it was like disco. Awesome.
Disco puddles. But then very quickly, this little romance turns to nothing. And then there's the you lied to me moment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he was one of them.
Which he was that guy.
I understood why he lied, because it was like, oh, this is awkward. And now I'm at their... like I'm stuck in this form because of her. So I need to kind of appease her because I kind of want to go back to being a human personally.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, anyways, all the different fairies, they come together and they're kind of flying in this big circle. And then it's in me, I'm thinking like, why do all the old magis always have to die? This is like Kung Fu Panda, you know, where the tortoise just floats away and turns into, you know, the elements. She does it. I know there are a few other films where that happens, but I'm like, you know, I'm thinking Star Wars, Obi-Wan Kenobi, that, you know, he just sort of disappears and lets himself die or get killed. And I think it's an interesting plot point because for the character or the hero, there's a point where they lose their mentor or their master and they have to step up themselves to save society or save the universe or whatever. And so this is obviously one of those points where it's like, well, you know, learn. It's kind of just like, I'll push you off and you'll learn how to fly sort of thing because I'm not going to help you anymore.
I'm not going to help you anymore.
Why did she have to die? I was really bummed. They live like thousands of years and they happen to die in this one movie.
Right. Well, I mean, we were talking about Hexus a little bit earlier, and this is the part where he, like, turns in, and he has his fantastic villain song. I mean, crazy awesome Toxic Love equals Tim Curry love. I love Tim Curry.
I love Tim Curry as well.
He's like, so good.
This is such a great role for him. I mean, the movie, maybe not so super memorable if you weren't a 90s kid, but he's so great.
He played it so well. And the thing is, as we're going, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's the guy from Home Alone 2. And then other people were like, because I actually watched this with a group of people. I don't always do that, but every once in a while we get together. We have a couple people that watch it up here. And a lot of people are like, I don't remember that one. I'm like, what? Okay, how about Pebble and the Penguin? And they're like, nope. And then another friend is like, oh, he's the guy who sings Easy Street from Annie. I'm like, yeah.
Easy Street.
I knew we'd find some common ground here.
Oh, yeah. So this is the only song I can't really sing it to you. Although Toxic Love, I know the title very well and I can associate it with this film and with him. But I do like this song in the moment. This is one of the songs that actually works. The sappy love song, I get it. This is, you know, like you said, it's the Robin Hood moment. It helps bond people together. It's the Lion King moment. You gotta have a cool villain song. The obscure random lizard character that we never see again, not necessary. And the 90s baddie rap, maybe not also necessary, but
villain song,
whatever. But this one, very, very good.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, you know, we go very quickly, and like we said, this movie's 75 minutes, so very quickly we move to the ending and the resolution and the climax, where there's this, like, giant battle, and Zach saves the day and is able to stop Hexus, which is actually quite scary and threatening because he kind of glossed over it, but he's able to control the humans and kind of convince them to hustle over to Ferngully to chop it down.
Yeah.
And does so at an incredible pace. I'm not quite sure with that one machine how he was able to chop down so much of the rainforest, but I'm going to look past that because apparently they did. And so he arrives at basically the doorstep of Ferngully, and it's up to our feeble little human to save the day. And Batty, of course, finally comes into play where it's like, oh, now we have a use for you. Fly me over there.
Yeah.
My own wings. So how do they kill Hexus in the end?
Well, in the end, he swallows a seed that Krista, like, goes in and, like, she kind of kamikaze, goes in there, plants the seed inside of him. So basically kind of in a symbolism of, I'm going to change the heart of the persons,
yeah,
you know, and that will solve the world's problems. And so at that point she goes in, flies in, and he's got all of these plants like coming out of him. He's like, what's going on with me? And then nicely, she just like falls out of a flower that came out of it, and everyone's happy again.
Hooray. And she becomes the new Maggie.
Yay.
And has to say goodbye to the human. It's one of those animated films where the guy does not get the girl. She kind of
It doesn't happen very often.
No, but it works. I'm glad that didn't really turn out that way. Anyways, before we go to our rating, let's do our listener Twitter question. And I've expanded this out to both Twitter and Facebook because we can't forget our friends over onto Facebook. We asked the question, why do you love or not love Ferngully, The Last Rainforest? Daniel C. says, it was a movie that the teacher would play when we studied biology / Earth Day in grade school. It was terrible, he says. Matt Chee says, lived in a logging town for a while. A teacher showed this to the class, and it caused a poop storm. Kids' parents were loggers. In my day, they'd show the Lorax for the same purpose. I didn't grow up in a logging town, but San Francisco, we were cool with it, meaning the Lorax. Catherine B. says, I haven't seen the movie in like 11 years, but I do remember it being really funny. I don't love the creepy smoke/oil monster, though. Melissa Kumro says, I would watch it at school for any reason. It's honestly a great movie with a solid storyline. Our last one, Maxfield S., says, it's the epitome of 90s kitsch. Also, Tim Curry. So, love that. And then a few of our responses from Facebook. He says, Matt G. says, I remember feeling disappointed that Batty wasn't in it more. That's about the long and short of it. I guess I'll have to revisit sometime to see if I like the animation or music choices. Dang, guys. 1992 feels so long ago now.
Don't even remind us.
Shat LeChat says, I enjoyed the characters, songs, and visuals as a kid. But even the 7-year-old me felt insulted after watching it. I was annoyed that every human character in the film is an ignorant, selfish jerk or a mustache-twirling villain. Remember the loggers who'd inexplicably enjoy cutting down trees? I mean, come on! While the forest dwellers are portrayed as beautiful, interesting, and morally superior. I couldn't swallow this heavy-handed tripe even as a child. And I even remember being left with a dislike of the fairies because of it. Something about the way the fairies pride themselves in being better than us humans, while at the same time passionately hating us and hysterically fearing us, made me kind of wish that they all would just go extinct. You know, that is a rant which I can hang my hat on. I mean, very, very good points.
Thanks, Shat.
Another Matthew says it's just a commercial for environmentalists. Carly says, I love that Robin Williams was in it, but that's pretty much it. I'm feeling a trend. Animation wise, it's not too bad. It's actually pretty nice at some points, and others, eh. Story wise, it's also eh. I'm not a huge fan of environmentalist movies. I think it does give the message across to kids, though. But when looking back as older, it's pretty cheesy. Overall, it's okay. It's a good flick to watch on Netflix when you're bored. Yeah, good point. So it seems like the common theme is, I remember watching it as a kid, possibly at school. But I find it interesting that other people sort of feel the same way as we do about the environmentalist message. That I think while we do enjoy saving the earth, it can be too much at times. So with all that said, what would you rate this film?
All right, so I thought I would not like this movie a lot more than I did, and I actually kind of enjoyed it. Like, they had some cool stuff, and Hexus really brought it together for me as a crazy cool villain. And they did some kind of cool things with the animation, and so I felt like this was a good film with an environmentalist message, in that it talked more about a balance of maintaining, you know, like restoring nature versus taking from it. So I will give it 3 stars. Yeah, does that sound all right? All right, you have 3 stars. Take it or leave it. It's about all I can do. And I mean, this wasn't as bad as the film as I thought it would be, I guess.
Mason gave it the 3. I'm thinking I'm not able to give it that much. I think 2.5 for me. I mean, it was watchable for sure, but it's not something that I'm like, I want to watch it again. Yay! You know? So that's where I'm at.
I would give it, 3 stars, to be honest. Like, I don't hate this movie. I actually somewhat enjoyed it. Like, when we were saying that we were going to do this movie, I didn't go into this being like, oh, I got to watch Ferngully. Great. It's not really what I'm into. So, like I said, the plot is actually pretty good. I like how tight it is. It doesn't go off in too many weird ways. Yes, we do have, you know, a side character who's a bit goofy, maybe not necessary. I understand why he's there, but, you know, it's mostly just Krista, Zach, and then Hexus, and everything else kind of revolves around that, and it's pretty streamlined and to the point. So since I didn't really hate watching it this time around, I'm just going to give 3 stars.
All right. All right, so now we have the exciting opportunity to hear from you, the fans. Let's hear what Dion said.
Hey guys, okay, I'm so excited you're doing Fern Gully. I absolutely loved this movie. I still do to this day. I think that some sequences are so beautiful and just remarkable. I think some of these scenes still live up in the lushness of their art today. The magical, mystical elements really resonated with me. I just remember writing stories or basing art projects on the world that Krista and Zach lived in. I was definitely pre-internet fan fiction going on right there. The whole save the planet, green living, humans are evil, and oil destroys everything theme was so on point for the time as well. Captain Planet ruled our prime time, along with Widget and other ozone-friendly programming. This villain scared me witless. Oh my gosh, I remember as a lad I even had a nightmare or two. I mean, Hexus, just saying the name gives me the creeps. I can just hear his hiss-like voice. The music was so forgettable, though. This is definitely no Ashman or Menken collaboration, and I think that the lack of good music contributed to this not standing the test of time. Musically, there is an interesting side note to remember here, is that for Elton John, this was his first foray into animation, and without this, Fern Gully, we may not have had The Lion King in its current state. Go Fern Gully! Clearly, I've got immense nostalgia for this film, and I'm rallying behind that. I actually think first-time viewers will enjoy this more than they think, too. I mean, Roger Ebert gave it a three-star out of four-star ratings, so how bad can it be? First-time viewers, go in with an open mind for a little treasure that has since spawned or inspired a multitude of lesser copies. Here's looking at you, awful. Epic, and Bully, Strange Magic, Avatar. Till next time, guys, thank you for the consistent, exceptional quality podcast and site. Endless appreciation. Bye.
I love how he... How bad can it be? It's Elton John.
I know.
Yeah, no, this was the very first time. There's a lot of firsts for this movie. First time Elton John, first time Robin Williams, first time played in the UN. It was a benchmark film.
Okay, our next one is from Mason, also known as Mason 2.0.
Hey, guys, this is Mason, or Mason 2.0, concerning that Mr. Smith has stolen my name. Anyways, great show on the little toaster. I actually did not notice the whole toy story element in the way that you guys saw it. I only saw it in just the characters coming to life. There were some parts, that I thought was odd now that I think about it, like the whole forest scene, And speaking of forest, Fern Gully, another film that was somehow part of my childhood. Yeah, I didn't quite get the whole movie until I rewatched it this weekend. Yes, during my own birthday, I managed to put in time to watch Fern Gully. So that was my 27th birthday. Was Saving the Forest. Anyways, the only thing I remember was what I thought was the Fern Gully fairy with the red dress and the whole weird bat. And I was actually surprised that the bat was voiced by Robin Williams. I don't know how that escaped me, but somehow it did. But this film is good. I can see why some people would regard it as one of the better films of the 90s. I put it next to, say, Land Before Time and American Tale as well. So, anyways, that's my review for the film. It's good. At least it's more watchable than Brave Little Toaster. And it's just, it was a little overkill on the whole pollution thing, but they tried to do it subtly. It was kind of trying to send Wally's message, but I think Wally did it a lot better. Anyways, have a good day. Bye.
Well, happy birthday, Mason 2.0. I'm glad you were able to watch it and glad that you liked it better than Brave Little Toaster.
I also like this better than Brave Little Toaster.
So did I. I definitely didn't like it as much as Land Before Time or Secret of Nim, though. So that's very different.
No, those are an upper echelon from this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next one is from Sarah.
Hello, Rhoda Scooper. Sorry, I got a cold. It's me, Sarah. I'm here to leave my review for the Fern Gully podcast. I'm still in the process of rewatching this one. So far, the Brave Little Toaster was a lot better than this. I like the villain and baddie, but not really anything else. I'm hoping that Mason will do a Tim Curry impression at some point during this podcast, because that would be amazing. The villain would be so much scarier if I didn't already know Tim Curry in roles such as, lost my train of thought, Nigel St. Nigel in Psych, and Nigel Thornberry in Wild Thornberries. So, yeah, that just kind of makes the villain kind of goofy and not scary to me. Oh, and what's his face and clue? Anywho, I can't give this a very high rating. I'd give it like a 1.5 out of 5. So, yeah. Bye, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. I love you guys. Have a great day.
Sarah, I totally feel your pain with the cold thing, you know. But thank you so much for calling in. We love you, too.
I don't think Mason did an impression in this podcast. He's not with us for the voicemails because he was having bad internet connection. But we'll try to get it on our, maybe if we do Fern Gully 2. Actually, I don't think Hexus is a character in that movie. But let us never speak of Fern Gully 2 again.
Let us never do it.
Hey, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. It's Marky. Here you guys are doing a review on podcast in Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest. So I just called and thought I'd leave a voicemail. This one might be quite short because I honestly can't remember that movie all that well. I saw it only once, and it was about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. And I had heard about the movie, and I knew Robin Williams was in it, so I said, hey, let me give this a watch. And like I said, I really don't remember the movie. So I just remember I wasn't a fan of it. I remember being bored by the whole premise of the movie, and the only redeeming factor I found in it was, you know, the late Robin Williams as Batty Coda. And then I actually put myself through the torture of watching the sequel, which that's another fun barrel of monkeys right there. But so I ain't got much to say about Fern Gully, but looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say. Bye.
So speaking of Fern Gully 2, dang it! We have Mark, and I've never seen the sequel. I guess I'm somewhat familiar there was a sequel, but I have no intentions on watching it.
I second that. All right, and last but not least, Miss Katie.
Okay, this is my voicemail for Fern Gully. I first saw this movie when I was in second or third grade, I think. I think it was third grade. And I really liked it because I thought it was cool. One, I'm a big environmentalist, like I already said. Two, I don't know. I like fairies and stuff. I think the mythology spin on it was really cool. I rewatched it a little bit ago when I found out it was on Netflix. Go Netflix. I mean, sometimes they have really cool movies from my childhood. Sometimes they have things like Balto 3, and I want to watch the first Balto. My favorite parts, okay, so it has like two weird songs in the movie, which I'm sure you guys will talk about, but it's like the creepy, oily, toxic song, which I like the animation during that. I think it's like the toxic moving and sticking and oil and stuff. It looks really cool. I always found that entertaining. But the song is just kind of like, I can't even sing anything to you. Neither of the songs are memorable. And then the wacky song by the Bats. I like all of the like background songs, like the cool like mystic background noise and stuff. But there are only two actually sung songs, and they felt really out of place. I don't know. This movie's always really cool to me. It has like that somewhat. I didn't even remember the long-haired, orange-haired pixie dude. I did not think he was a thing. All I remembered was a human that was shrunk and the girl with the red dress. Are there names set in there? I don't remember any names. off the top of my head, and I just watched this like a few months ago, along with Brave Little Toaster. Yay. So I also really liked the old woman that was teaching the younger Red Dress Fairy. I'm just going to call her the Red Fairy because she's wearing a red dress. Anyway, I just thought she was spunky and kind of cool, and I liked her super poofy dress. I thought that was awesome. I liked everybody's clothing. It's, like, really earthy, but at the same time kind of, like, cute. Like, the red dress girl was kind of wearing, like, a Tinkerbell-ish dress. The top was a little more jagged, I think, but, like, the bottom was almost the exact same. And then I liked the water scene where she was walking on water and stuff, and the most scene I remember vividly from the third/second grade viewing was, like, when the guy was walking down the stream, and he put his hand on the tree, and he actually felt it. I'm just like, yes, he gets it. He understands the meaning of being nice to the earth. I think it's very important for people to realize that we are killing this earth, and I do not like logging. That's bad. And by the way, I do not think they pinned all of the blame on humans in this one. Like I think you said in the Once Upon a Forest episode, I think it was just that there's this like evil spirit of pollution and bad stuff that kind of took over their vehicle, and the humans were just kind of collateral damage. They're just like, oh, this is our job. We're doing it. Oh my gosh, something bad happened. We need to stop. We're wrecking things. No, get out. And they tried to fix it the best they could. So you guys are awesome. And I have a quick request for you guys. Mason, you are going to hate me, but I want you guys to do My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, Equestria Girls. Yes. And Mason, I do request you be there. I think that would be awesome. Love you guys' podcast. You're hilarious. Bye.
Alright, guys, that is all we have for episode 95 of the Animation Addicts podcast. For all show notes, definitely go to rotoscopers.com/95. That's where you can find links to buy the soundtrack, to rent the movie if you don't have Netflix or Amazon Prime. You can watch it for free there, but if for some reason you're itching to own this on Blu-ray, I have all those links right there. Also a few links to particular things we talk about in the episode in particular. So go check that out. It's a great resource. Also, when you're there, give us your review of the film. What did you like about this film? What didn't you like? Start the discussion in the comments below. The three of us are in the comments, you know, for about a week or two afterwards commenting with you guys. It's a lot of fun to hear what you guys think about the film. To contact us, send us a voicemail at rotoscopers.com/voicemails, 406-646-6575. That's where you can give us reviews of upcoming films that we're going to do, and try to keep them short. We have about a two-minute limit, so try to keep it about that two-minute mark, so that way we can include so many, because I'm so happy we're getting so many more voicemails now, which is great. So, yeah, give us a call. And, of course, the newest thing, which I am so excited about, is Patreon. This is a way that you can support us by providing a monthly contribution to keep the show running. We have various perks and things that you guys will get for being a patron, such as access to the patron-only Facebook group, our monthly call-in show where you can ask us anything. And we, you know, I'm really excited for that because it really will just be like a grab bag of all sorts of animation discussion that we can't really talk about on the normal show because we have to be very focused on one movie. But that's going to be awesome. So definitely subscribe and support us on Patreon, rotoscopers.com/Patreon or rotoscopers.com/patron, in case you spell either way. You could also support us by using our Amazon affiliate links, rotoscopers.com/Amazon. We also have some international links. Our friends at Canada can also use rotoscopers.com/CA. And for other countries, go to the show notes to use that link there. If you like audiobooks, we've got you covered with Audible, rotoscopers.com/audible. And of course, if you haven't gotten your hands on the Rotoscopers t-shirt, give it a buy, rotoscopers.com/store, and you can pick one up before they're gone. They are running out, and we are giving some away for different levels of being a patron. So if you want one, definitely get it, because we are not going to reprint these ones. Anyway, Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a review. We love when you leave us a review. So thank you, thank you, thank you to those who have. It's an easy way to support the show. And yada, yada, yada. I mean, you guys hear this every single time I say the same stuff. Social media, Morgan Stradling, Mason, SMTX, and Chelsea Robson. Boom.
Yay.
That's it. So people have suggested that we keep our calendar on the front page of the website. A lot of people like to look at that because it gives people chance to watch the film in advance. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, if you go to rosecopers.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom, that's where I have a list of upcoming films. So we're going to do Simpsons movie next, and then Peter Pan after that. So I'll have links where you can rent or buy the film so you can keep up. And yeah, get ready for the Simpsons movie. Chelsea! Yes!
Yay! This is our moment to shine.
It is. All of our Simpsons knowledge coming together. Boom. So until next time, that's all we have until we visit the amazing world of Simpsons. So until then, we are the
Like up for my alarm in the morning.
Hello.
And it's a delicate balance between finding something that'll wake me up, but also isn't too jarring for Shanna because she's pretty particular. So there are two songs from like a psychedelic metal band that I like, and they're like the only acoustic ones, and so they do a good job.
Oh, I thought you were leading into this with, there are two songs from Ferngully that.
Humans! They should do like a hard rock version of Toxic Love. Toxic Love.
Significant amount of rain for May. Like, honestly, it feels like San Diego right now, which really? We should be in the hundreds and, you know, getting to the point where you're like, oh, summer.
Arizona. Like, summer. Perpetual nice. Summer.
Yeah.
It like the whole weather changed over here, and I've never had a problem with allergies, but this year, holy mackerel, it killed me. So like for 2-3 days, I completely lost my voice, and it's still like barely coming back, and I have this horrible cough still, but I'm like, man.
I got a question, Chelsea.
What?
So you're going to Berkeley, right?
Right.
I mean, most awesome music school ever. Are you like allowed to lose your voice if you're at Berkeley? Like, do they like kick you out of class?
Hope not.
They're like, Miss Robson, your voice is not in pristine condition.
See, what's funny is like everybody who goes to Berkeley goes with an instrument. And so I'm going as voice as my instrument. I'm like,
it's like your wand.
It is. It's very powerful and mystical.
I'm guessing you're bringing your guitar.
Of course I am. I have two guitars.
And her keytar.
I wish.
Oh, I want.
Basically one of the coolest instruments to come out of the
80s. I'm too nerdy to not have one.
Exactly.
I suppose if I went to Berkeley, I'd do the harmonica. I would major in harmonica art.
For the
harmonica
April
science.
For April Fools this year, they put out a video saying that the new instrument that they will be allowing would be the kazoo. And this guy like goes off for like 10 minutes about how the kazoo is such a wonderful instrument.
I'm honored of classical instruments.
Exactly. It was
of
good times.
Clowns and, you know, comedy acts alike.
Slapstick comedy. Yeah.
Re-add the Mason. Poor Mason.
Poor Nana.
Poor Nana. Anyway.
What about poor father?
Oh, that's such a good one.
Oh, we gotta do it soon.
Alright, well, I might have to sit out the ending just because I don't know what's going on with my connection, but I can at least finish this with y'all.
Okay. Kid in King Arthur's court, yes. Please talk about it. Oh, we may have lost Mason.
Like, I tried to add him, but then he wouldn't.
We are almost done. Like, we just have, like, 6 more bullet points.
Yeah, dropped from the call. Is everything okay now?
Yeah.
Hello? 2+2.
4.
It's like your favorite thing. Okay, no delay. I do remember seeing that movie in theaters. And I remember there was a short that played before it. It was, like, a goofy short.
That was one that I wanted to see, but I never ended up seeing.
Darn it. Why don't we branch off into enough animated, weird, obscure Disney movies? Maybe when we run out of enough animated films, we will, you know, include some Disney ones.
Yeah, there you go.
But that's probably like 6 years down the line. But that's okay.